DW.
Our car rattles up the narrow streets into the hills of a poor barrio in eastern Caracas. Neighborhoods like this are home to millions of lower-class Venezuelans. Carolina Subero guides us down a row of stairs into her tiny two-bedroom home. She lives here with her mother, sister, and three children. Her youngest daughter, Gengelis, is crying. Carolina takes her into her arms. Gengelis is a beautiful little five-year-old girl with long dark hair and big brown eyes. But she's also autistic and epileptic, which means she needs medicine regularly. Medicine she can't get.
She has seizures every day. Last night she had three. The medicine helps to make them not as bad. When we can't get her medicine, they send her to the hospital.
Carolina holds her little girl and rocks her back and forth on the couch. She says that Gengelis used to take four different medicines for her seizures, but now, because of the U.S. sanctions which are blocking the import of essential medicine, Carolina can only get one of the drugs, and that only some of the time, because it's too expensive. A box of pills that will last 10 days costs around $8. That doesn't sound like a lot, but acquiring that kind of money is very difficult for most Venezuelans who don't have access to dollars.
I've had to trade food for the medicine. They sell it in a box of 20 pills, and it's really expensive because it comes from another country, and they want to hurt us.
Without medicine, Gengelis' seizures can get bad. She is just one of the victims of Washington's war on Venezuela and one of more than 300,000 people who are estimated to be at risk because of a lack of access to medicine or treatment. That includes 16,000 people who need dialysis, 16,000 cancer patients, and roughly 80,000 people with HIV, according to a report published in April by the Washington-based Center for Economic and Policy Research. Marcel Quintana is the Venezuelan who has lived the longest in the country with HIV, 33 years. He is now in charge of the distribution of antiviral meds to the country's HIV patients, something Venezuela has provided free of charge for decades. But now it's next to impossible to acquire the medicine, which is all imported.
We understand that the Pan American Health Organization has had to change the accounts used to purchase the medicine four times because they keep getting blocked. The blockade is not just against the government. It's against the people who are living with HIV. It's against the people who are living with cancer because they don't allow the medicine to come into the country. They are blocking not just the country, but the health of people living with HIV. And this is serious, very serious.
The U.S. sanctions are only one piece of the U.S.-backed plan to overthrow Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The Trump administration has openly supported Venezuelan opposition leader and National Assembly President Juan Guaido. In January, he proclaimed himself president, which the United States quickly recognized. Since then, Guaido has tried to oust Maduro with street protests, a showdown at the border with truckloads of humanitarian aid, and an attempted military uprising on April 30th. Andri Trias is an avid Guaido supporter. She's a mechanical engineer who lives in Caracas and who joined anti-government marches the day after the April 30th attempted coup.
I want the U.S. to invade us. It's that simple. I would rather us be a colony of the United States than continue to live in this precarious existence.
Trias and others like her blame Maduro for corruption, shortages, a failing economy, and hyperinflation. Government supporters say the United States and an economic war are behind the growing crisis in the country. Pascualina Curcio is a professor at the Simón Bolívar University in Caracas. She is one of the top economists who's been studying the impacts of the U.S. sanctions and what she calls the three weapons of the economic war on Venezuela: shortages, the trade blockade, and manipulated hyperinflation. She believes that at the root of Washington's actions on Venezuela are politics and natural resources.
Venezuela has the top oil and gold reserves in the world. You also have to remember that in 1998, Venezuela began to advance toward an economic model different from capitalism, and it has faced financial, commercial, and monetary resistance from global powers.
We will continue to uphold.
U.S. sanctions have become increasingly aggressive since they were first announced by U.S. President Barack Obama in 2015. Under pressure from the United States, foreign companies stopped doing business with the country. Citibank closed Venezuela's foreign accounts.
As we meet today, the people of Venezuela stand at the threshold of history.
President Donald Trump intensified sanctions in 2017 and this year imposed an oil embargo that blocked the purchase of petroleum from Venezuela's state oil company, PDVSA. It also confiscated Venezuela's U.S. subsidiary, Citgo, worth $8 billion. It was a huge blow for Venezuela, which received 90% of government revenue from the oil industry. Lucas Corner is an editor and staff writer for the Caracas-based independent media outlet Venezuela Analysis.
Venezuela's oil exports to the United States, which were at 550,000 barrels per day in the beginning of this year, fell to zero in March. A third of the economy is going to be destroyed in 2019 alone.
The U.S. government has now also frozen $5.5 billion U.S. dollars of Venezuelan funds in international accounts in at least 50 banks and financial institutions. Even if Venezuela could get money abroad, the United States has long blocked international trade by threatening sanctions on foreign companies for doing business with the country. Medicine is only the tip of the iceberg. According to representatives from Hidrocapital, the state water agency for the capital, Caracas, roughly 15 to 20% of Venezuelans don't have access to potable water in their homes because the government cannot acquire new foreign-built parts to fix broken pumps and pipes. That's a huge problem, says Maria Flores, vice president of operations at Hidrocapital.
With the blockade, we've had situations where we have the pumps and the motors, and they're about to ship, and then comes the all-powerful hand of the United States, and they block the money in the bank or sanction the company that's working with us just for selling us this equipment and without seeing that they're affecting people's lives. It's not Chavez, it's not Maduro, it's the Venezuelan people that are waiting to have access to water.
In response, Hidrocapital ships truckloads of water each week to needy communities, like Alto de Lidice in western Caracas. Here, residents line up and wait their turn for the water to be pumped into their trash can-sized buckets. Yolimar Contrera lives in the neighborhood, in a two-room cinder block home high up the hill along the edge of the Guaraira Hispano Mountain.
We haven't had water for 3 or 4 months because we're high up on the hillside. Since things have been getting worse, it's been a long time since we had water.
In July, the U.S. government also levied sanctions on top officials involved in a major Venezuelan subsidized food program, which the United States says is a front for corruption. The impact of these sanctions could also be devastating. The program is called CLAP, Local Committees for Supply and Production, and it's a lifeline for roughly 6 million low-income Venezuelan families who receive a box of food staples each month at almost no cost. On a sunny Friday morning, hundreds of boxes arrive to the poor barrio of Caucahuita in eastern Caracas, down the street from Carolina Subero's house. Dozens of community members turn out. They're in charge of the local distribution. It's completely run here by the Brisas de Turumo commune, which is like a massive neighborhood association encompassing more than 8,500 families. They help to offload the boxes from the larger trucks onto smaller vehicles, organized by each communal council. These carry the food to residents on each street in each neighborhood. José Daniel Pérez is a university student and an organizer with the community group.
The CLAP is a strategy to respond to the fact that food has been one of the main things impacted by the U.S. blockade, since this is a country that often depends on imported food. This CLAP box here costs each family only 150 bolivars, less than one penny on the dollar.
Inside each box is flour, cooking oil, dehydrated milk, and several bags of pasta, rice, and beans. These products are easily found in stores across the country, but with hyperinflation, they're far too expensive for most Venezuelans. The opposition charges that this food comes rotten and is only delivered to government supporters. But in this poor neighborhood, every family gets a box. Kerlin Hinojosa is the first to pick up her package. She carries it back across the street and opens it up in her kitchen.
It's a big help, because with the situation in the country, 1 kilo of rice is 7,000 bolivars. Cooking oil is 8,000 bolivars. It's very hard.
That 7,000 bolivars at the time was just over a dollar, but that was also equal to nearly 20% of the monthly minimum wage. And with both hyperinflation and devaluation of the bolivar, those products keep getting more expensive. Many of the products in the CLAP box come from abroad, Turkey, Mexico. The U.S. embargo could further hinder Venezuela's ability to acquire the food. A loss of the CLAP program would be disastrous for the country's poor families, greatly exacerbating the crisis. Venezuela is in crisis, but you wouldn't know it on a tour of wealthy neighborhoods in Caracas on a typical Sunday. Those with access to dollars pour in and out of the upscale Sambil Mall on the eastern end of the city. On the top floor, a sushi restaurant is packed. A two-person meal there can cost several times more than the monthly minimum wage. But in the poor barrios, many try to hold down multiple jobs, jobs with access to dollars if possible. Some travel to nearby Colombia, where most basic products are now cheaper than in Venezuela. Millions have left the country in search of opportunities abroad. Carolina Subero's husband is one of them. He sends money home each month, but it's still not enough to pay for their little girl's medicine or to make ends meet. Carolina is not a huge fan of President Maduro, but she also doesn't blame the government. The problem, she says, are the U.S. sanctions.
They don't care. They think they're hurting President Maduro, and they're really hurting the people. If they really wanted something good for Venezuela, they would not be doing what they are doing right now. I would like to tell the President of the United States to please have a heart, because just like my case, there are many more children in even worse situations.
With the total U.S. embargo and the loss of the country's major oil revenue, the situation is going to get worse. Some analysts have even mentioned the word famine. That's not the reality now, but that doesn't mean it won't be in the near future. Michael Fox, DW, Caracas, Venezuela. DW.